Hello, everyone. I'm Becca, dietitian by trade, mom 24/7, wife from the start, and when there's a few extra hours in the day, you might find me hitting the trails or on horseback.
And I'm Kara, a therapist to women, a mom to a boy, an entrepreneur, mountain junkie, and a postpartum runner.
And this is Fit for a Queen, a podcast that's devoted to the female athlete wanting to balance the teeter-totter of all the things we desire out of life as women. Performance, health, intellect, and taking time for self, even if we only get 1 minute out of the day.
We're so excited to be bringing you the queens in the athletic world who have done just that. Okay, ladies, take a seat at your thrones, grab your crowns, and welcome to Fit for a Queen.
Welcome back, queens. Today we have Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard, who is the host of Leveling the Playing Field, a podcast featuring women who work in sport. So right up our alley. The podcast came about as a result of Bobby Sue's passion for supporting women in business and leadership roles, especially in sports. On Leveling the Playing Field, Bobby Sue conducts casual conversational interviews with women who are making their marks on the industry. In her day job, she's assistant general counsel for a professional sports organization. She's a graduate of the UMass Sport Management undergraduate program and Penn State Dickinson School of Law. Bobby Sue's career path was anything but a straight line. She began her legal career as the first in-house counsel for a small family of life sciences company and then moved on to a telecom company prior to her finding her way into the sports industry.
She's a strong advocate for mental health wellness and breaking the stigma surrounding mental illness, having personally lived with diagnosed depression and anxiety since she was a child. As such, she's not afraid to broach these and other difficult topics with her guests. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LTPFpod or via the website ltpfpod.com. And you can follow Bobby Sue on Twitter at Bobby Sue. Bobby Sue, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This will be fun.
Yeah. We always have fun in studio.
Probably too much.
Well, you definitely have had a twisty path in your journey to the working world and where you're at. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So, I literally had no idea what I wanted to do when I went to college. I just heard of this program called sport management and thought it was cool. And when my high school cross country and track coach was like, well, what are you going to do with that? I was like, I am going to be the first female athletic director of this high school. Like, so feminist and not even realizing it. And I really just fell in love with the law aspect of it. So, as the first person to graduate from college on any side of my family, I just kind of like, you know, applied to wherever for law school. I had no idea and ended up where I did. And when I graduated, it was right as, I mean, hundreds and thousands of attorneys were being laid off from these major firms. And that had a trickle-down effect so that even like very small firms were being super picky about who they were hiring, and there were just no jobs. So I ended up waitressing for a couple of years while a licensed attorney. my first job in the legal world came about through Twitter, weirdly enough. I had a follower who was a writer for the Boston Business Journal, and she ended up doing this cover story about young attorneys who couldn't find work as attorneys and what they were doing instead, and featured me in this amazingly terrible picture of me in my home office with all 3 degrees above my head and, oh yeah, whatever. So this guy who he and his wife owned a small group of life sciences companies, and that sounds a lot more impressive than it is. I think we had like maybe less than 50 employees. Claimed that they had been thinking of bringing someone in house, and he saw some numbers in that article and was like, yeah, I can afford her. And I had no science background, so that was really interesting. And after a couple of years, you know, it's not a normal thing to go straight from, you know, being a, you know, a law student or a waitress to the first in-house counsel of any company. Mm-hmm. And people will ask me how I did it. And I'm like, I don't know. I just did it. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of years, I realized I was getting to a point, even though I had great outside counsel, and they're some of my mentors to this day, I needed to be around other attorneys so that I was growing as an attorney and just generally professionally. And so I moved over to this telecom company, and that, you know, throughout the whole time, I'm making contacts on Twitter, weirdly enough, with people in the sports world and, you know, doing mock interviews and stuff like that. And at the telecom company, I was able to stretch my skills a little bit. I did some of our lobbying work down in D.C. So I was like the face of our company down in D.C. And I remember interviewing with the Spartan Race company, and they're based in Boston. And someone I used to date actually works there, and but we're really good friends. And he's like, I think you'd be great for this role. And so I applied and went in and interviewed, and I ended up not getting it. And I was crushed. And before the interview, I was connecting with this man, David Cohen, about, you know, what I should do. And David is somebody that I had connected with on Twitter in the early days of Twitter. And when I talk about that first job that I got through Twitter, I mean, this is like, we're talking 2008, 2009. Oh, wow. Twitter was a baby. Yeah. And it's why I have my first name as my Twitter handle, because I was one of the, you know, I was really early on. And so David and I had connected there because there were a lot of solo attorneys who were creating this community on Twitter, and it was awesome. And so David and I had gone through some like prep for the Spartan Race company interviews, and then I didn't get the job, and I was really upset. And that was like August of 2014. Well, a few months later, I noticed that David looked at my LinkedIn profile the same day that a recruiter that he had introduced me to did. Now, this is one of those reasons why you want to be able to check who's looking at your LinkedIn profile, right?
Right.
And so just very casually over GChat, because why would I do anything in any sort of formal manner? I was like, hey, what's going on? Why are you and Gary both looking at my my LinkedIn? And he's like, I don't know what Gary's I don't know what Gary's got, but I might have something in a couple months. Like, I'll keep you up. And so what ended up happening is he made this business case to the COO and ownership that the role had previously been a paralegal role that moved to like a very junior attorney role. And he made a business case that if we paid just a little bit more, we could get somebody who has far more experience and thereby can do more work. And because of that, you know, I was one of five people that he brought in, he hand selected. He asked his like small network a little bit, but he never posted it. And, yeah, in February of 2015, I moved from Massachusetts down to Tampa, Florida.
Wow. Talk about social media being
powerful.
Your friend. Yeah. In terms of your work world. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, for I have to always caveat this. I have not done Twitter right in terms of like what I would suggest people do now. Mm-hmm. I was 100, like maybe overly myself on there for quite a long time, where like I would just have rants. And mm-hmm. I'm fortunate enough that that didn't impact me negatively when I was in those. And maybe it did. Maybe that's why I didn't get Spartan Race. I don't know. But like, those are things that I say you got to be a little more careful about now. Back then, when I got that first job, nobody knew what the hell Twitter was.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to be much more, you know, like everyone, you have to be much more aware of what you're posting. And there's just so much more noise. It's harder to make those individual connections now.
Right. I like that advice. Don't be overly yourself on social media.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I went through some pretty dark times, and Twitter was like that's how I like interacted with people, because I was in a pretty dark depression for a while. And so like, I would just be like, you know, pay attention to me on Twitter, which, you have to understand your audience, right? And the greater impact. So, you can't find those tweets anymore. I've purged them. although I'm sure they live somewhere like in the depths of the interwebs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had to do a fairly large purge at some point. And I think that's part of growing up, too. You know, you just kind of get through those things.
Sure. So it's interesting. You are in an area that both areas, sports and law, that's male dominated. But it sounds like males actually opened the door for you. How's it been working in the industry and trying to navigate that this is still a man's world?
It's really interesting. So I get asked this question quite a bit. And when talking about sport, I'm really fortunate that the sports law world is really welcoming. And I had the benefit of working for a gentleman, David Cohen, who is just a huge supporter of really, you know, anybody who does good work. So, but he's, you know, kind of made a point of mentoring women coming in too. And the previous organizations that I worked at, unfortunately, there were far more individuals within those organizations who were overtly sexist and misogynistic, and who it was particularly in telecom. I think telecom is such like an old school environment, and there was a bit of a frat boy mentality. I've not experienced that quite nearly as much in sport. And I think part of it is maybe, you know, part of it's my age too, right? Like I command a level of respect at times, and I will push back if I feel as though I am being spoken to in a way. I mean, this is all within reason, right? There's always somebody that you don't feel you can push back on. But, you know, I try to make people around me aware when they're saying or doing something. I've had experiences where somebody has told me to smile. And I mean, this is somebody who has no idea what the hell's going on in my life. And I just looked at that person and was like, probably don't want to say that to a woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the response back was, why not? And I'm like, would you say it to a man? No, okay. I wouldn't say that to a man. I tell him, da, da, da. I'm like, then don't say it to a woman. Mm-hmm. It's sexist. And and the response was, what, I can't say one thing to one person and another to another, and it's not sexist? I go, that's the definition.
Yes, exactly.
Yep, you're right.
And again, it's some of it's education. And, you know, I have to be aware that, like, I can, my attitude can sometimes make people stop listening because I can be slightly aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I have to understand that a lot of the time it's not necessarily something they mean to do and that they just need to be educated. Mm-hmm. And that aggression won't always educate them, right? So
right.
I'm learning that in my own way. But I mean, honestly, if we're comparing, you know, the previous industries that I've been in to this one, I've felt more welcomed in. Mm-hmm. That being said, there's, you know, some obvious points where we need to make some moves, right? So we need more women in leadership positions. We need to increase the media coverage of women's sports. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we're, giving young women equal opportunities to play sports and to grow into the industry on the business side as well. And, that's, I think, where I come in with the podcast is one of my ways of trying to help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like for you to talk about that a little bit more. Why did you decide to create this platform of discussion? And why do you think women are underrepresented in this field in general?
So, you know, back in the day, this is a boys' club, right? Professional sports has really always been that way. And so even though we make strides on a daily basis, there's always going to be a bit of a disparity, or at least there is going to be for a long time, because men have always had that head start, right? They were always mm-hmm. allowed to work, mm-hmm. whereas we as women were not, regardless of the industry. The reason I started the podcast, there were a couple of different things going on in the world that were making me a little ragey. And there was an election that I didn't agree with. There was, and that I started to feel really uncomfortable about. There's always an industry list of, say, like top 50 under 50 or something like that. There are never enough women on it. Mm-hmm. So little things like that. And I needed a way to not have a Twitter meltdown. Mm-hmm. And I really felt like I could do something that would focus my energies. And so I've been listening to podcasts for a while. Even though sometimes he's a bit of a bro, I've been listening to Tim Ferriss forever. And I really enjoyed his long form interview types, mm-hmm. you know, not like a 15 or a 10 minute thing. And it's more my style anyway. And so I just started talking with a couple of my, I don't know, personal advisors, I guess, and just like people that are in my life that I run ideas by or talk to about things. And I think the minute I came up with the name of the podcast is when I really knew I was going to do it. Because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that works so well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, the main goals are to shine a light on the women in the industry. And to provide a resource for young women who really don't have possibility models, right? They don't have women that they see in, and it's actually generally a problem, like it with sport management programs and the sports business industry. We don't really market ourselves well to young people who are thinking of what they want to do for a job. Mm-hmm. People have no idea the kinds of jobs that you can have in the mm-hmm. sports industry.
Exactly.
And so with this, I can provide possibility models for young women. You know, I don't like role models. I think that's too morally grounded, right? The mm-hmm. possibility models are a way to show people in positions that you could possibly have. And, you know, some of the women on the podcast are very experienced, are, you know, COOs and first in the, you know, women in the industry to break a ceiling of some sort. And then others are 2, 3, 5 years out and still kind of getting their footing. And I think that that's important to show the breadth and scope and not defining sports industry as the big four male sports that you see on TV, mm-hmm. Including anything that touches the industry of sport. And those have been the goals, and I hope I'm living up to them. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think part of that is having a strong woman, having worked in the NFL and collegiate sector. I think they test you at first. And I remember one time something had happened and I was like, why didn't anybody give me feedback? And in my face, they said, well, we didn't want to hurt your feelings. And, you know, at first I probably would have been like, oh my gosh. But then I just kind of looked at them like, that takes a lot to hurt my feelings, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they almost want to see us crumble. So you have a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
But I also like, you know, to that point, I don't know that that's just a male thing. Mm-hmm. I have seen managers of all shapes and sizes and genders and ages who are just not comfortable providing constructive feedback to people. And will instead, and that's problematic. You know, it's healthy to get feedback, good and bad. I think that there's a right way to deliver it. But mm-hmm. I'm constantly asking for feedback on whether it's my day job or the podcast. I want to know what I can do better and how I can make things better. And I'm always reading, I don't know, whatever books I can read to learn about different aspects of myself from a personal standpoint and a professional standpoint.
Yeah, we actually were just talking about this, how we both appreciate direct communication versus kind of passive aggressive. Like, just tell it to me straight.
Yeah.
I can't change anything.
And I used to be the queen of passive aggressive. That's some of my old roommates. I mean, you know, that's like where you are the most passive aggressive, right? Is when you're like 22 and you're living with someone and you don't like that they do whatever, cough a certain way, and you leave a sticky note on the mirror, right? Like, I think we all, you know, unless we've had really good role models, you know, or people around us who model effective disagreement scenarios and how you have that, that's where you go to, right? So, now I might be a little too blunt.
You've gone the opposite. No, I appreciate that. Our main goal for this podcast, which you know, is to speak out and educate athletes on mental health. You're also involved in bringing awareness to mental health issues. Can you speak a little bit more about your journey and why you are talking about it more?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for asking about that. So I grew up in kind of a not great situation. And one of the reasons for that was my mother is pretty severely mentally ill. Her bipolar disorder is not very well managed, and it really affected us a lot. And prior to that, my biological dad passed away when I was 8, and there was a lot of trauma associated with that. And I myself have like been in and out of therapy ever since he passed. But my mom's bipolar disorder was really destructive, and created a scenario where I had to take on a role that I shouldn't have had to take on for a very long time. And I was, I think, first diagnosed with depression when I was 13, 12 or 13, and I think anxiety was kind of a byproduct of that. Although I don't know that we were looking for anxiety back then. But we didn't really do anything about it. It wasn't something that my parents, we didn't do things with it. And my mother's diagnosis, I mean, she had been kind of on the depressive side anyway and taking whatever medication for that, but the bipolar didn't really spike until I was 14. And then, you know, everyone kind of knew there was something off with my mom, and we really hid it, and we were ashamed of it, and therefore I was ashamed of any issues I was having, even though I've always been educationally much more aware of mental health issues because of my mom's mental illness, right? So I logically understood these more, but from a shame standpoint, I just didn't want to talk about it and didn't want other people to know about it. And the worst thing you could say to me was, you know, you're just like, you're crazy, just like your mother. Yeah. And fast forward to a break-in at an apartment of mine and the engagement ring that my mom got, which, I mean, if like you're looking at a dollar value, may have been worth $100. But it was very important to me. And it was stolen in that break-in. And I had a complete breakdown. And I ended up regularly starting to see somebody. And from there, I don't know, like 5 years ago, I was still being very quiet about it. I would hide my medication from, you know, when like guys I was dating came over, and I never talked about it with them. I had one serious relationship and he knew about it. His mother also has bipolar, but it's much more managed. And she's able to function much more. So that opened me up to being able to start sharing, I think. Mm-hmm. But then when we broke up, it was like back in the world of dating and like not wanting people to think I'm crazy, right? Like that's the worst thing is, you know, I didn't want somebody to think, oh my God, what am I getting into with this chick? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, there are other reasons to think that with me. but when Robin Williams committed suicide, I had a moment where I was like, you know what? The reason why people commit suicide, part of it is because they feel helpless, alone, and ashamed. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had enough background and actual information that could be shared. But the best way to share it would be to tell my own story. So I did a very long post on Facebook and basically outed myself to all of my friends on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And saying, you know, the reason I'm sharing this is because I don't ever want any of you to feel like you're alone, that it's, you know, hopeless and that you don't have resources. And if you're ever feeling like, you know, hurting yourself or others, you know, please know I'm here to talk to you and we can get you the right resources. And that started this dialogue. And I got a lot of, and I said at the out front, I did not post this because I want, you know, your pity. That's the other thing. You don't want pity, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want your pity. I'm not expecting any certain responses. I just wanted to put this out here in case it can be helpful for someone. I got amazing responses back. And so over the last couple of years, I've been even more open about it. That little line that you read is in my speaker bio for whenever I go and speak at events. It's something I will reference in like regular conversation. Like, you know, I have no problem talking about my anxiety or my depression. I am very fortunate that I'm on the mild side of all of it. So I've always been able to mostly function. I personally have never had the thoughts of harming myself, and I feel fortunate for that. But it does sometimes interfere, and, mm-hmm. I do sometimes have to take days and just kind of get myself rebalanced and have to be aware of certain things that are better for me from a mental health standpoint than, that others may not have to. Like, I have to make sure I get enough sleep. I have to not drink. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a really big thing for me that I've learned in the last 2 years, was that drinking had a really negative impact on my mental wellness. And so I try and open the conversation. I try to create awareness by not only sharing my story, but allowing space for others to talk about theirs, yeah. Particularly on the podcast. I've been really lucky that some of the women who have come on have been involved in certain organizations or have their own like platform related to mental health issues. We had Denise White on, and she's on the board of Project 375, which is Brandon Marshall's organization around mental health and young kids. And so, you know, I will from time to time put up a little thing that's like, hey, if you're feeling like it's a bad, you know, a rough day, know that you're not alone. I'll share about my struggles. You know, when I'm having a rough day, I've been having a rough few days. One of my little fur babies had to cross the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, so, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's been a rough couple of days, but I'm open about it because I feel like, you know, if we're not, that's where all the shame comes from. That's where all the stigma comes from. And that's why people don't get help. Mm-hmm. And it's just like any other medical issue. Mm-hmm. And so why we don't talk about it, why we allow people to go through life feeling alone, you know, there's just no need for it. And I love seeing athletes who come out. Actually, the day that we're recording this, Mariah Carey just came out as bipolar, which gives a little bit of color to her journey, right? And kind of explains some of the behavior. And so, you know, the more people talk about their struggles, the more dollars that go towards research, right? Towards, you know, better medication or better resources. And the more that somebody of my stature, which I don't think is very high, but, you know, I have a career in sports, and so that's kind of a big deal. You know, the more that parents are open about their own, the more likely we're able to catch things earlier on and to put people on a course where they can, you know, better manage that health issue, even though it's mental health, it's still a health issue. And we can prevent some really unnecessary struggle.
I often say, why wouldn't we expect the brain is an organ like everything else? So just like the liver can have issues, the heart can have issues. Why wouldn't we expect that there could be some dysregulation within the brain? So, boy, Bobby C, you sound like an amazing, powerful woman that now being the mother of a young daughter can provide some inspiration. We won't use role model because I agree with you. But we're curious, what were some of the women that you looked up to in this field that kind of paved the way or paved opportunities that you could model after?
Oh, gosh. So, I mean, one of the first women that, you know, really made a huge difference is Catherine Switzer. And I say that because I was a runner in high school, and had I not gotten into running with my particular program in high school, I probably wouldn't be here today. It helped keep me on a good path. And I really connected with her story of kind of being that renegade who's like, I'm going to run this marathon whether or not you want me to. And then the work that she has done at Billie Jean King, same thing, the work that they have done to create opportunities for women to play sports. You know, Title IX kind of came about because of those women. And that allowed me to get into sports and to find my love of sport. And then from like a business perspective, you know, you've got people like Denise White, who's been on the podcast, is one of the first women to really break into the agency world. And she created the marketing agency side for players. You have people, I'm trying to think, like Jeannie Buss, you know, who is a badass owner and, you know, is really, just kind of does things her way. There are women in all different areas of the industry who are doing amazing things, and I'm inspired by every single one of them. You know, I have a habit of writing congrats notes to women who get that top job in whatever their little niche of the field is.
I love that.
And you know, it inspires me. Like when I see a female promoted to athletic director of any school, like that's awesome. Like the head athletic director, that's amazing. You know, 5-10 years ago, that didn't happen. And commissioner of a conference, like those are such great things to see. And I really am. Everybody has such a unique story. And I'm just really fortunate that I have an excuse to talk to them all now.
Yeah, right.
That's why we do the podcast too.
That's
so
right.
Talk to women
talking
like you.
Some amazing women.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Bobby, so at the end of each of our interviews, we ask how our interviewees live out the fit philosophy in terms of finding balance in your life. So how do you kind of find that balance? I know you talked a little bit about some things in terms of self-care, of what you need when you're having some struggles. So what else do you do to incorporate that as much as you can on a regular basis?
Yeah, so, you know, I try and do Headspace every day. I'm not always great about it. And I do allow myself when I'm just not feeling like it to sit inside and Netflix all day, right? Like I allow myself to have those moments or days. I have great friends who This week alone, they keep me sane and they help me through hard times, and I try and be there for them and hang out with them and their kiddos. And, balance is a weird way to describe life sometimes, mm-hmm. because there are going to be certain times in your life where you're like uber focused on one thing and everything else kind of goes to the wayside. So you have to look at it in a more long term than in that one moment, right? So I just think, I'm going to be crazy busy for the next 6 months, but then I'll be able to pull off a little bit, and I get little, I buy cupcakes and like go outside and play with baby animals when I can, just to make me happy. And I think that as long as I don't get too wrapped up in whatever stressor is in the moment, then I'm doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Bobby Sue, thanks so much for being on. Please, everyone, check out her podcast, Leveling the Playing Field. And again, thanks so much for being on and what you're doing.
Thank you, ladies, so much for having me on. It was a great time. And I love what you're doing as well.
Oh, I appreciate it. Have a good one. Thanks, Bobby Sue.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to our sponsor today, Sentimano Counseling. Sentimano Counseling is the premier perinatal mental health practice in Kansas City, treating mood disorders during pregnancy and postpartum, perinatal loss, infertility, eating, and exercise disorders. Go to sentimano.com for further information about the practice and services. For additional information on today's topic and guests, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FitForAQueen.
Hashtag fit for a queen.
And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We can't wait for you to join us next time on Fit for a Queen.
Bye, queens.